Thank you. Good morning. I have no relationships to disclose. Today I'm going to be talking with you all about some of the initial findings from a study that's called the Kentucky Terminate Lung Cancer Study, or the Kentucky TLC Study. And this is a study that's funded by the University of Kentucky Center for Clinical and Translational Sciences, the Appalachian Translational Research Network, and the NCI-designated Cancer Center at what we call the UK, but it's the University of Kentucky. And I also want to acknowledge the large team of investigators and community members that are a part of this team, including some from the, again, UK, University of Kentucky. We have a community advisory board. We have partners from the Appalachian Translational Research Network, and then we have a team of partners from an entity in Eastern Kentucky that coordinates the work of community health workers. So my colleague Erin, I thought, did a nice job earlier of bringing you some context for lung cancer screening. We know that lung cancer in general is bad. It's a leading cause of all cancer deaths in the U.S., and the five-year survival is very low at only 16%. It's much worse than Kentucky. Kentucky's lung cancer mortality rate dramatically exceeds that of the U.S. We have the highest lung cancer incidence and mortality in the United States, and those rates are the highest in the eastern part, or the Appalachian part of the state, which is where we focused our study. And again, I think Erin did a nice job of reviewing that the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force released new recommendations in December of 2013 that were based on the National Lung Screening Trial. I won't review those findings. I will also mention that the American Cancer Society and the American Association for Thoracic Surgery, among others, have also published formal screening guidelines. So let's just take a quick look at what the recommendation is. They published a grade B recommendation for lung cancer screening with chest low-dose CT at the very end of December of 2013. And a grade B indicates that the task force recommends the service. In this case, it's an annual low-dose CT scan, and I'll define the eligible population in just a minute. And the grade B also indicates that the task force believes there's a high certainty that the net benefit is at least moderate. So the study, the Kentucky TLC study, has three aims. The first is to develop a lung cancer screening campaign in eastern Kentucky, again, where the rates are the highest, through a formative assessment involving high-risk target populations. The second aim is to implement that outreach campaign to assess the uptake of low-dose chest CTs. And then third, to assess the impact of using community health workers to further promote the uptake of lung cancer screening. And what I've highlighted in yellow here is the portion of aim one for which I will report the findings today. So we used focus groups for Aim A that informed the development and the implementation of the TLC campaign, and I'll show you some of those images and messages that we developed. And then the study continues at the end of next year, 2016. We will conduct the final evaluation of the study, which will include monitoring and looking for an increase in uptake of low-dose CT. We're also using some surveys, and our community advisory board is helping us to keep a pulse on the campaign throughout the two-year period. So what I've circled today is, again, what I'm going to share with you all. So this is what the state of Kentucky looks like. It's a largely rural state, and if you look at the right hand, the eastern part of the state, about that third part of the state towards the eastern part is considered Appalachian. It is almost entirely white. It is a very impoverished part of the state, low economic opportunity, low education levels, low health status in general, and again, some of the highest, if not the highest, lung cancer mortality rates in the nation. So we conducted, let me go back just one second here. So the three colored areas that are highlighted here, we call the Moorhead region, the Pikeville region, and the Hazard region. Those were our three parts of the state. They're delineated more for purposes of implementation of the campaign. because we have a controlled region for that. But for purposes of the focus groups, we conducted 2 focus groups in each of those 3 regions for a total of 6 focus groups. They were conducted in fall of last year. We recruited approximately 10 participants for each focus group. The eligibility criteria for the focus groups mimics the eligibility criteria for lung cancer screening. So you had to be in the age range of 55 to 80. You had to have a smoking history of at least 30 pack years, and I'll remind you of that when I show you what the smoking history of our population looked like. It dramatically exceeded this. And you had to either be a former smoker who quit less than 15 years ago or be a current smoker. I mentioned earlier community health workers. They actually conducted the recruitment of participants for us, and then we trained the community health workers to actually implement the focus groups. We felt that was an important element for community capacity building, and I must tell you, they did a great job. They were very nervous at first, but they did a great job. Our participants were paid $40 each to participate, and then at the end of each of the focus groups, one participant self-identified to participate in our community advisory board. And this is an important board that continues to meet to this day to help us with the campaign, but they were critical in helping us to decipher the findings of the focus groups. So in the focus groups, much like what Aaron's group did, we began by assessing baseline understanding regarding lung cancer screening. And it didn't take us long, that portion of the focus groups, because there wasn't much there. And then we would stop, and the community health worker that was moderating the session had a 2-page fact sheet about lung cancer screening. So she would stop and review that with participants and gauge their reaction. And then most of the following discussion focused on receptivity among the participants for lung cancer screening. We assessed multiple domains of receptivity to lung cancer screening, including the message content, message appeals, message design and implementation, and message sources and communication channels. With regard to analysis, this was sort of standard qualitative data analysis. All of the focus groups were recorded and then transcribed, and 2 investigators independently reviewed those transcripts to identify themes. And then, as I mentioned, we thought it was critical to have the community advisory board help us with the interpretation of those themes that we identified. So I'll show you some of our results. And these were recently published in a paper, and I have a citation at the end of the presentation. So you can see that about 63% of our participants were current smokers. I'll just point out here, looking at the smoking history again, to be eligible for lung cancer screening, you need at least a 30 pack year history of smoking. And among our former smokers, that was almost 62, and among current smokers, it was 44. The mean age was about 62. It was predominantly female, about 61%. Everyone in these focus groups was white. That didn't surprise us. That's really what this region of the state looks like. With regard to education level, 44% had a high school degree, and only 15% had some college beyond that. And then we thought it was important to ask participants how they rated their general health. Most of them rated their general health as either fair or poor. There was a lot of discussion in these focus groups about their health conditions. A lot of these folks had chronic bronchitis, COPD. So when we asked about baseline understanding of lung cancer screening, the overwhelming majority had never heard of lung cancer screening. But we also, just as Aaron mentioned, recognized early on that there was very little understanding about what a diagnostic test was and what a screening test was. So when we asked this question about lung cancer screening, many of the participants said, yes, I have been screened. And then as we probed that further, what they would tell us is, well, I've had a biopsy for a nodule on my lung, or I've had an ultrasound, or I've had a chest x-ray because I've been coughing a lot. So there was a lot of confusion about what screening meant. So, and I have direct participant quotes in yellow here. So for example, one participant said, you mean you could be symptom-free and still have cancer? So we stopped the focus groups. Again, the community health worker reviewed some facts about lung cancer screening. And then we gauged their reaction to that. And a vast majority of participants indicated that they would consider having lung cancer screening themselves. And in fact, only two participants felt differently. And this quote I thought was symbolic of how both of those participants felt. No, I don't want any. I don't want to know. I just want to go. When the Lord wants me, I just want to go. But the vast majority were interested in receiving this screening. We asked them, what is the most important message? And the primary response that we received across all the focus groups was the importance and the benefit of early detection. Once we walked them through that and explained what early detection meant and how this screening test could identify an early stage lung cancer, they felt that that was the important message to hone in on. They also emphasized that lung cancer screening can provide, quote, peace of mind. And then the other thing that they mentioned was that it would be important to mention that lung cancer screening is covered by most health insurance companies. We asked what message will resonate, and there was a strong consensus among participants of the importance of personal testimony, such as seeing a photo of someone who had survived lung cancer after having it identified through the screening test. And there was also, it was also clear that they wanted us to emphasize messages that linked prevention to seeing your children and your grandchildren grow up. We asked what would make the message trustworthy, and participants again stressed the importance of personal testimony and the message of being saved by screening. Interestingly, many of the participants talked about the CDC campaign Tips from Former Smokers, and while some were impacted by it, a majority of participants did not like the idea of scare tactics. Although, again, I'll just point out, nearly everyone had seen and heard it, so that might be evidence of the effectiveness of the campaign. We asked what the best way was to share the message, and this one was clear. There was consensus that they wanted to receive this message from their primary care doctor or their specialty doctor. So just to summarize, messages of testimony, messages of hope, survival, and a connection to family are all thematically important. And bear in mind that these participants were over the age of 55, so this message for them was about seeing their children and their grandchildren grow up. Certainly our study population, which was all white, predominantly low education and rural, may limit the generalizability of our findings to other populations. But again, this region has the highest lung cancer deaths in the nation. These findings were used to develop a lung cancer screening campaign for high-risk individuals. Someone asked earlier, we have disseminated the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommendations to all the healthcare providers in this region. We have provided materials in provider offices. We have ads, including NPR ads on the radio. We have materials in local newspapers and direct mailed material out there right now. And the goal is to increase both patient and provider education about lung cancer screening. Our goal is to see that communication enhanced so that decisions can be made with evidence. And this just shows you some of the messages that we have developed based on the findings of the focus groups. I talked with my doctor to see if lung cancer screening was right for me. I'm glad I did. For your peace of mind and theirs, talk to a doctor about lung cancer screening. Find out if it's right for you. And again, these are all white populations because we have an all-white population in that part of the state. These are messages of hope, messages of survival, messages of prevention. So as I mentioned, we're in the process of implementing that campaign. We're monitoring low-dose CT rates in the region. We're getting ready to conduct random digit dial telephone surveys. And this last one here is the paper that we have just published based on these findings. Thank you.
Okay.
One question I have is, knowing that area, I used to live there, in terms of where are the providers who are doing the lung cancer screening, I'm thinking in terms of some of those barriers to access in terms of getting to a provider who can read the x-rays and do a good job with screening.
It's not difficult to quantify that. There are I don't know the number, but there are less than 10 across that entire region. This population is accustomed to traveling long distances to receive specialty care. Many of these people are under the care of a cardiologist or a pulmonologist. Many of these individuals, as I said, have COPD, chronic bronchitis. They are used to seeing specialists. So, it wasn't difficult to quantify all of those provider offices and work with them. Everybody agreed to receive the materials.
Just an aside, the VA has one of the best informed consent forms that I've found in terms of being, it's low literacy, it's got a lot of diagrams in terms of false positive, false negative. So when you're looking for a resource to share, the VA probably has one of the best consent forms.
That's good to know.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Do you know whether the USPSTF guideline or recommendations, this is how they pose it, have any recommendations about someone's overall health and in terms of their projected longevity? In other words, you mentioned that when someone has 62 pack years worth of smoking, the majority self-report that their health is either fair or poor. Are those the folks who should be screened anyway? Is there anything within the USPSTF recommendation about someone having at least a 10-year life expectancy, as an example?
No, not that I'm aware of. I mean, I think the upper limit of the age is part of that, too. 80 is their upper limit. I think what you're describing is the reason why our goal is not to increase screening, but to increase dialogue between providers and patients and making the decision that they think is right for them. There's a lot of comorbidity in these folks that were working with us.
And a follow-up on that related to the dialogue that you're talking about, I'm a little confused by messages of prevention. My understanding about screening, which is secondary prevention,
right,
is actually around early diagnosis.
Right.
Prevention, I think most of us in public health think of that as actually preventing something from occurring to begin with.
Yeah, I don't think we use the word prevention in our messages.
We use it several times.
Well, these are the messages. These are the actual messages that we use.
No, I understand that.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
well,
I think that's confusing.
Well, for, we shall come to the general discussion. So.
In the focus groups, did you ask the current smokers in that group about how screening might impact their decisions about quitting smoking?
We did not specifically ask that, but that topic organically came to the focus groups, and there was a lot of discussion, spontaneous discussion in those groups about interest in quitting. People shared stories of how they quit and failed and quit again, but we didn't. That wasn't a specific question, but there was a lot of, organic kind of support that happened through these focus groups where people shared their health challenges, and quitting smoking and the challenges around that was discussed quite a bit.
Okay, so. Thank you very much. We are going to have the general discussion. So,
okay.
Okay. Anyway, thank you for the good question and the participation. It's a lovely panel. Okay. So now we've gone through four papers. Two are complementary. One different. The other what? Different. So two complementary papers, but they are all what diverse papers. From screening through what skin cancer through actual health policy conceptual issues. So thank you for your participation. We have about 15 minutes for what general discussion. So the floor is now open, and please let's talk about any question that you have for we the panel, and we'll be ready to answer. So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Get to the access to the following care that they might need.
getting that screening because of the perceived barrier to the access to follow-up care?
So that's a great question. And when we were going through the review process for our grant application, that was a specific question that was asked of us. So at University of Kentucky, we're lucky that we have an NCI-designated cancer center that has strong affiliations with the Appalachian Regional Health System that spans across the eastern part of the state. That, in conjunction with Medicaid expansion, and Kentucky's been actually probably one of the more successful states with Medicaid expansion. I don't know that we know anecdotally at this point, based on our campaign, what challenges we may have related to that. But at least at the phase of the design of the study, we felt that we were, through those relationships, formal relationships between the cancer center and all of the providers across the eastern part of the state, that we would have that covered.
Okay.
Just a comment about, I think this is very multifactorial. I'm a practicing medical oncologist, and you realize the importance of CT scanner, and as somebody who did internal medicine before, I realize it's important, but people need to realize there are policy decisions that have to come into play with physician time and how they are going to be, how these discussions will be handled in their clinic. In an internal medicine clinic, you've got about 20 minutes with a patient to talk about all of his or her medical issues. You don't get anything extra, for lack of a better way to phrase it, when you spend 10 minutes on prevention. You're increasing your time without getting any kind of positive reimbursement from your end. You've already got several hundred patients you're dealing with. You're just not going to have time to do it. So I think healthcare providers are very aware of all of this and realize the importance. It's just a matter of policy decisions trickling down to their reimbursement for the primary care level.
Yeah, I think that's a follow-up comment to this. I do comparative studies, and that's something interesting. When you look at the UK system, the National Health Service system, they reward physicians for keeping their panel healthy. Okay, that's their approach. Their panel, and if you're a physician, if your panel is healthy, that's where you get your bucks. That's different from here, where we have to diagnose and treat. And it's the more you treat, the more you diagnose, the more money you get, which is a whole different. That's why we are trying to do this prevention study across those Atlanta to be able to tease out some of these differences.